Veteran Podcast. Thank you for your service.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. We're here again this week, and you know, we've been doing great in 2023. We've started off talking about transitioning out of the military. We've talked about veteran suicide and how we're trying to tackle that. One of the things that we don't talk about all that much, and we haven't in the past, is some of the challenges that families in the military go through. And let's not forget that, you know, just because you're a military member, that doesn't mean you don't have a family, you don't have a spouse, kids, challenges that come with all of that. And today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to have a child with special needs in the military, medical issues in the military, and what the struggle of the family is trying to deal with that while still serving and still having obligations in the military. It presents so many different problems that maybe civilians don't deal with, you know, changes in duty locations, having certain medical facilities nearby or not nearby, deployment, schools, all these different things that we do as service members. And then the spouse having to deal with, you know, the child that needs special medical care or has special needs. So today on the show, we have Don Culp. He is a warrant officer in the United States Army. Okay, he is a helicopter pilot, and he's going to tell us a little bit of story of his daughter and the basically, you know, focusing on what he learned from the experience of having a sick daughter in the military. Dealing with the grief of loss. She passed away right before her fourth birthday and having to deal with that. And then we're going to kind of talk about what he's doing now to keep her memory alive and to help out others that are going through possibly similar situations. So, Don, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah.
So this is obviously not an easy topic to talk about. The loss just in general can always be a little difficult. But even for me, like as a dad, I have a four-year-old right now. So I can only imagine what my brain would do if I ever lost her. And being a father, my condolences go out to you for your loss and your wife as well, because I don't know that I would be able to just quote unquote pull myself up and go on with life if I lost her. And I guess I want to hear a little bit about you as a person first, and then we'll kind of get into your daughter, her story, the diagnosis, you know, pregnancy, all that kind of stuff, any information that you can give us so that we kind of understand how this all transpired, what challenges she faced, and how your family kind of processed all of it. So why don't we start off with you yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, again, Don Culp. I've been in the military since March 13th, 1997. I've been in the Guard. I've been in the Reserves. I'm currently serving in the Reserves now. I'm actually no longer flying now. I was a helicopter pilot from 2009 to 2017. Mm-hmm. I initially came in as a enlisted service member. I was a chemical operations specialist and did basic training at Fort McClellan, Alabama, and AIT there as well. And so I served from the ranks of E2 all the way up to E6, and then got picked up for warrant officer. And my desire was always to fly. And so I finally got my opportunity after about 10 years of being in. And I went to Fort Rucker, 2009, went through flight school and deployed in 11 to 12 as an Apache pilot. As a chemical guy, I mobilized in 2003 for the initial start of Operation Iraqi Freedom. So being an enlisted guy to going to being an officer, going combat support to combat arms, different perspectives as far as, mobilizations and deployments are concerned. And then 2017, I think it was 6 years back, 5 years back from our last deployment, we found out that we were going to be going to Afghanistan. And some things from my prior deployment, which we'll touch on later, I guess, had occurred with my daughter. And at the time, I had enough time to be able to retire. So I actually put in my packet to try to retire in 17. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. There were some issues with paperwork that I had to get resolved. And so I actually went to the IRR, which is the inactive ready reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't realize that I was going to lose all of my benefits right away. And having a family and everything, we had TRICARE, and TRICARE is gold as far as health insurance and everything is concerned. So, and I obviously needed to solidify my retirement and get all that stuff fixed. So I came back in, I did warrant officer retention for a while, and I'm actually in the JAG Corps now. Anticipated retiring date is looking towards the end of the year as far as retiring. Just got picked up for CW4, so we'll see kind of how that goes. That's military side, civilian side. I actually work as a flight consultant for the Challenger Learning Center, and I actually instruct kids about flying, teach them the basics from ground school all the way up. We're kind of a poverty-stricken school district or what have you, and so this is kind of a great resource for students to have to be exposed to aviation. Otherwise, if this entity, this organization didn't exist, we wouldn't be able to, or they wouldn't be exposed to stuff like that. So,
of course.
Yep. So, again, I'm married, been married for 16 years. I have six children, counting Braylon. She's in heaven now, as we've already mentioned. But my age ranges for my kids. My oldest is 21 and my youngest is 4. And all the oldest ones are girls, and the baby happens to be my son. So, yeah.
That's a hell of a stretch, man. 21 to 4.
Yeah, I know.
You're a busy man, I would imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, between the civilian sector with my civilian job, the military, and then trying to manage the foundation, and then just trying to be, you know, a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Very, 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 very busy.
Very busy. Very busy. I'm sure your wife helps out plenty in all of that.
My wife does quite a bit to help as well. And she's got a load on her plate. She's a full-time college student right now going to nursing school. She works as well. And then, you know, we've got the kids. So,
yeah.
Busy, busy.
Busy, busy, man. I'd love to hear about Braylon. I'm interested in her story. You know, I've read on your website a little bit about her history. You know, the challenges were right away from birth. But I'd like to hear a little bit about her, if you would just please tell us, you know, her story.
Yeah. So, January 16th, 2009, Braylon was born. I had to leave for flight school. I had to report to first walk at Fort Rucker, Alabama. I actually had to report there on January 22nd, 2009. So Braylon was born by C-section. And so the move to Fort Rucker is a PCS. So your whole family goes with you, mm-hmm. and everything. But my wife couldn't go with me. She had to stay with my in-laws, her parents, because of the fact that I, for the first 4 or 5 weeks while down there, I wasn't going to be able to come home. I wasn't going to be able to see her. And I mean, this is 5 days after she had just had the C-section. So
not going to work.
Not going to work. Nope. So I had left. She was with my in-laws, and I had gone down the night before that I was supposed to actually report and unloaded some of our personal effects into the house that we were going to be living in. And then I did my 4 or 5 weeks or what have you. And then my wife, the day I graduated, met me. She was already down at Fort Rucker probably about a week before I was actually supposed to graduate. And, you know, she had Braylon with her. And everything was okay initially. You know, she was a little baby. She was doing what babies do. But we noticed in the very beginning when we would hold her, you know, that she would make little minor eye deviations. Her eyes would go, they would either get stuck to the left or stuck to the right. And it seemed like it would happen every time I would hold her. And so I would always joke. I was like, does she not like me? She won't look at me. And then occasionally her eyes would actually start to shake. It was the weirdest thing. If you've never seen it, it's just it's scary and weird. And we didn't think anything of it initially. But then as she got older and she was starting to try, she was supposed to hit certain milestones, mm-hmm. things started to happen. And so with the way flight school works, it's not just a, it's, I mean, it's not just flight school. There's other phases of training that are incorporated into the entire flight school thing, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that being said, so you could be in one phase of training and then have not a break, but you're waiting for the next class to start. And so you're on a detail. So like for me, I would be on funeral detail or something, waiting for my next phase of training to start. Well, I happen to be in the primary phase of training. I had already gone to walks. I went to see her, and then I get into the primary phase of flight training. And I had come home from the flight line one day, and Braylon was about 6 months old at the time. And she was lying on the floor in the house, and she was real lethargic, pale, and everything else. Well, she wound up, she had a seizure, and it was just, she was having, we eventually found out that the eye deviations were like little seizures that she was having in front of us, and we didn't even realize it when she was a young baby. And then as she got older, she was starting to get to the point where she could eventually start having full-blown, not, I say full-blown, but it was developing, like the it increased in severity
right.
The older she got. So they wound up at 6 months old, she was actually taken to Enterprise, I think it's Memorial Hospital or whatever. Small hospital, Enterprise, Alabama is a small town. And here it is, Reagan's only 6 months, or correction, Braylon is only 6 months old. And she's taken to this hospital and they're trying to figure out what's wrong with her. And they wound up, she was so dehydrated, they couldn't get IV in her, they couldn't draw blood from her. And they were worried initially about meningitis.
Okay.
And so they were trying, there's only a certain way with meningitis to 100% confirm that, you know, you have meningitis. Well, there's two kinds, there's bacterial and there's viral. But either way, normally to confirm that you have meningitis or what have you, they normally do a spinal tap to get spinal fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was something that was actually conducted at Enterprise Hospital. They did a spinal tap on my daughter. They kept trying to stick her in her back over and over and over and over again. And I'll never forget it. I won't forget it for the rest of my life. The noise made, her screaming. And I couldn't be around.
Yeah. I know how bad it is, but just drawing blood from the child, you know, from a young child. I can imagine trying to do a spinal, and the discomfort.
Yeah, well, the amount of, so they weren't equipped to, I mean, they did the best that they could.
Okay.
They did the best they could with what they were working with, but they didn't know what was going on. And as far as her specific condition, mm-hmm. and they were just trying to find out why is she being the way that she's being. And so what ultimately happened was that she was actually flown from Enterprise, Alabama to Sacred Hearts Children's Hospital in Pensacola, Florida.
Okay.
And she was there. And naturally, this required me taking a break in my training because I had to focus on my family. And this was kind of a one shot deal now, because like at the time I was in the guard, and we had PCS to Fort Rucker for flight school, and I was on an active status with the guard. Mm-hmm. And so there was no civilian job if something happened with not making it through flight school. And so, but even then, being in the middle of this, I mean, I had to put everything on pause because obviously her condition was the most important.
Yeah.
So we go to Sacred Heart, and we're there for a few days. And she winds up being discharged, but they confirmed that she had had a seizure. They were able to go in and draw blood. They had to go in to the side of the head here and put an IV in this way or what have you. And they were able to get blood and everything else then. But this would be the start of many hospitalizations and many other episodes. I could spend probably an hour alone just talking about the different hospitalizations in detail, what they did, what they said, mm-hmm. everything else. But this is the start of where we fully started to understand everything. And the frequency of Braylon seizures, I mean, that you just never knew when they were going to happen. What eventually happened from this was They put us in touch with a neurologist. We had some different studies done. We'd have to drive down from Fort Rucker to Gulf Breeze, Alabama, or sorry, Gulf Breeze, Florida, to go see the neurologist for them to do different things on her. They would eventually start prescribing her medicines such as phenobarbital, Tegretol, those sorts of things. And it was just a trial and error type thing to see what medication specifically worked on her. And so what ultimately came to be would be the frequency of her seizures. She would go, you know, from having seizures every, I don't know, when she was having the eye deviations in front of us. I mean, that seemed, if I recall correctly, it was like almost every, I don't know, it was like every 45 minutes if I call. Now, I'm not going to say every 45 minutes right. for a 24, 48 hour period, but it seemed like every time I picked her up, those eye deviations started. Mm-hmm. And the entire time, every time that happened, she was having a seizure. So when you have seizures, it kind of locks the brain up and freezes the brain up. Now, medically, I can't speak to you, you know, like a doctor could as far as medical conditions. But what I can tell you is, as far as her seizures go, the frequency in which she was having them, it was hindering her ability to hit certain milestones.
Right.
So she was significantly delayed. Motor skills were delayed. You know, mentally, cognitive development, everything was delayed.
Right.
And so the rest of the time at Fort Rucker was pretty stressful, to say the least. Just the demands of flight school, me having to focus on that, my wife trying to deal with Braylon and our other children. But Braylon also wouldn't sleep through the night either. I mean, Braylon would sometimes sleep for, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes and then wake up again and then go back to sleep. So if me or my wife ever got 4 or 5 hours of sleep, that wasn't 4 or 5 hours of consistent sleep.
It right. You're constantly sleep. Being woken up, you know, the whole
but
time.
It got, yeah. So it got to the point where we had to sleep in separate rooms, and it was a very trying time, trying on us individually, trying on our marriage. Everybody was stressed all at all times. Mm-hmm. And here we are, all of our eggs are in one basket, because it was a no fail option for getting through flight school. I mean, quite honestly with you, if I'm going to be 100% transparent.
Yeah.
Now, but Fort Rucker, we wound up finding out about being able to move on base. So we lived off post,
mm-hmm.
and we found out that Braylon would be entitled to more programs if we moved on post. For example, she was able to get a therapist to come work with her inside of our home if we lived on base. They weren't going to do that off post, but they would do it on base. So she would get, she had somebody come into our house, I think 2 or 3 times a week. And then she would also go off post to Ozark, Alabama, to a place called Sumlar Therapy, and they would work with her as well. And these rehabilitative skills plus the medication, eventually things would start to head in the right direction.
Right.
But I'll just, you know, to getting through flight school, she would be hospitalized another time, where I had to take yet again another break in training because of the incident that she had going on. And then, so I got back in the mix and, finally got through flight school. 3 weeks after graduating flight school, our unit was mobilized, and then we ultimately deployed, to Iraq. And, During the deployment, you know, I had to come home. I had to come home on 2 different occasions at the front end of it. And the first time I came home, it was just a seizure. She was in the hospital for a few days, and I just made sure everything was good. And then I went back. And then the second time that I came home, it was really bad. I mean, it was a couple of seizures and a stroke. And at the time, she was 2.
Oh, wow.
And the stroke actually damaged a portion of her brain, but it was so bad that my you know, superior, my commanders, if you will, they were asking what was going on, and the doctor was trying to relate to me, you know, what was going on, what their recommendations were, and then I had them asking me over here. Well, instead of me being the mouthpiece and being between the two, I decided to put the doctor on the phone with my first line supervisor, if you will. And they basically the doctor told them that they don't recommend that I return on the deployment. And, And so they said, because my, because Braylon's condition could have been fatal. And I went back, I begged to go back on the deployment. There were a few reasons. One was because there's other people that are over there, and they have families and they have things going on too, and they don't get the opportunity to come home. I was fortunate to be able to come home, not once, but twice.
Twice, yeah.
And then we also, we needed me to be over there and for just all the benefits of being deployed, if you will. And so I ultimately went back, and then the entire rest of the time that I was on deployment, there was no other incidents.
May I ask what your wife's input when you're making that decision? So this is, you've come back twice now. The second time, obviously worse than the first time. First time was a standard seizure, but she was hospitalized. The second time included a more severe seizure with the stroke. So now you're home. Your doctor is telling the commander, you know, we don't recommend him going back. There are various reasons why you want to go back. All of them, I completely understand. What's your wife's input at that point, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I mean, she naturally had mixed emotions about.
I'm sure that's a tough conversation.
I mean, she had a lot on her plate too. Because yeah, I mean, dealing with the amount of kids that we had at the time, and then so since Braylon's passed, we've had two additional children.
Okay.
But so at the time we had four together. Yeah. But my oldest daughter wasn't there all the time. So at one time my wife would have three kids with her at one time. But having one special needs child alone by itself can be quite difficult.
100%.
So her feelings were mixed. She had mixed emotions about me going back, to be mm-hmm. honest with you. On one aspect, there were benefits to me going, but then on the other side, there was the fact that the help that I was able to provide, that would be gone if
you go. Right, right.
Yeah, the physical help. So it mixed emotions.
Yeah. So inevitably, you returned to Iraq.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I went back on the deployment and wound up finishing it all out. Came back, and the entire time that I was gone, like after that incident, it was like there were no more incidents. As a matter of fact, I was overseas and I got a video from my wife. Braylon learned how to start walking while I was overseas. I mean, my wife got her to learn sign language. So
I saw that on the website. I was reading that. I was going to ask you about that, but when I saw that, I was like, "You don't." That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
To hit those things were amazing.
Yeah, and so the frequency of the seizures stopped, the hospitalization stopped, and it was just nothing but. I mean, her growth just was. There was no more plateau. I mean, it took off.
Right.
And I mean, she learned sign language. She was able to feed herself. She was able to start saying things. She used to say, one of the common things that kids say when they first start talking is, you know, dada or mama, just
of course,
based off of those syllables. Well, for me, she didn't say dada. She said da, single syllables. Mm-hmm. And so I saw this video and I saw all these things that she was doing and I saw the things that my wife was able to start getting her to do. And I came home, and the day that I got home, Braylon attended a program at the school that was right around the corner from where we lived. And it was designed for special needs kids that were a little bit behind. It was designed to help bring them online for whenever they were ready to start school. They were right there where they needed to be. Right.
Right. Right.
And so I had an opportunity to go pick her up from that. She made me a little picture, and it's her handprints, but she got mad every time they went to go get her right hand. So they did her left hand twice and with paint, put it on this thing. And it says, "Welcome home, dad, dad." And it's got the year 2012 when I came home. So I got to pick her up. And I mean, she was just on a crazy high as far as her development and everything goes. And one of the things that I did when I came back is I wanted to take my family on a much needed trip.
Of course.
So we went down we went down I-95, went all the way down to Florida. We went all the way down to Orlando and worked our way back up. And we did Disney World, we did Sea World, we did Marine Land, which, by the way, if you ever have an opportunity to go, Marine Land's kind of cool. It's a conservatory for dolphins and stuff, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, so we took them, we went to all those different places, and they got to feed the dolphin at Marine Land, watch them swim, watch the trainers work with them. And then we went to Jacksonville because ultimately I was coming off of an active status and going back to a traditional guardsman, if you will, still aviator at the time, but at my civilian job, I actually picked up a civilian job in Jacksonville working as a contractor. For the Army, if you will. It wasn't for the Army, it was a DOD contract.
Right.
We did stuff, but anyway, it was in Jacksonville. So we went to go look at our house. We did some stuff around the St. John's River, explored a little bit, and then we just kind of came home. Well, all that time where there was never any issue with seizures or anything, and all those milestones quickly came to a fast halt, because as soon as we got to Disney World, Braylon had a seizure right there. And all the people, the emergency services and everything at Disney came, and Braylon had to be taken by ambulance to Arnold Palmer Children's Hospital in Orlando. And so my wife had to go with her, and me and my other kids were just kind of like, well, what do we do now? And, but I couldn't do, you know, the rest of Disney. I kind of wanted to know what all was going on. Now, it ultimately wound up to where my wife would be with Braylon in Arnold Palmer's Children's Hospital. But this was just another incident where she had a seizure and wasn't coherent and everything else. And just, they had to do stuff to kind of revive her. I mean, I've not had a lot of experience around people having seizures, but with my daughter having a seizure, it was almost every time she was completely incoherent afterwards. And there was just like no coming back, yeah. So to speak. It's and like, without the care, I don't know that she would have come back on her own. I can't say that, because every time required a hospitalization. And it wasn't just a, oh, well, you're in the hospital, you're good now, you leave. It was days.
Yeah. This isn't like the movies where you see a seizure and then the person, you know, just gets up afterwards and is, you know, a part of a conversation, or they're okay, they're at their house and they're just resting. This took a lot of intervention to right. Get her back up.
Yeah. And so we ultimately, my wife stayed with her. She eventually got out of the hospital, and then we went back to Disney so that we could all kind of hang out together. We went to SeaWorld and just try to move on past it, hoping that everything would be all right. So fast forward, this was June 2012 timeframe. Mm-hmm. I had gone ahead and started my civilian job. I moved to Jacksonville, and it was about a month of me going back and forth from South Carolina to Florida. And then my wife moved down to Jacksonville, and or Orange Park is actually where we live. And then everything was fine. And then, one day I had gone to my civilian job. And I'd gotten there. It was about 8:45, I think, if I recall correctly. My phone starts ringing off the hook. Well, I'm talking to my boss at the time, and I couldn't answer my phone. Mm-hmm. So then my cell phone starts ringing, and then my work phone starts ringing again. So I pick up the phone. It's my wife's number, but it's my neighbor. She goes, Don, she goes, you need to come home. I said, any time that Braylon had an issue, it was always a big deal to me. Mm-hmm. But after going through seizure after seizure, you know, it was like, oh, well, Braylon's having another seizure. We're just going to have to go through this drill again. That's what I thought. But Jean was my neighbor. She said, Don, you need to come home. And I said, is Braylon having another seizure again? And she said, your daughter's sick. I think it'd be best if you came home. And that's all she said. I said, okay, I'll be on my way. So I told my boss what was going on, and I actually told him, I said, I think my daughter's having another seizure. And so I go home and I pull into my driveway. My cul-de-sac is completely filled with, you know, police officers and ambulance and just all kinds of people. And I was just like, what in the hell is going on? And So I get out of the car. I see my wife on the front porch face down. It's still not dawning on me, you know, what I'm about to walk into. So then I go up to the front porch, and there's a police officer or sheriff who meets me at the front door. And he goes, "Are you Mr. Cole?" He goes, "Are you Braylon's father?" I said, "Yes, I am." And let me retract what I just said. There was not an ambulance in the cul-de-sac. The ambulance was gone. There were other emergency vehicles in here. But I saw the ambulance leave.
Okay.
I asked him something to the effect of, I saw the ambulance leave. I said, "Where's Braylon?" And they said, "Inside." I said, "So she's okay." Again, my wife's here off to my left, like on the ground, and it still hasn't dawned on me. And he looked at me, and looking back on it, he was struggling to put into words what was going on. And I don't know why I said it, but I said, "Are you trying to tell me my daughter's dead?" And he said, "I'm sorry, sir, she didn't make it." And then so he moved out of my way and let me go inside. And I go in, and there was a rug where my dogs laid normally. And my daughter was on the floor there. And I kind of lost it at that point. I tried to get to her, and they kept me from getting to her. So that was October 2nd, 2012. Her birthday was January 16th. I missed her third birthday because I was deployed. Mm-hmm. And the last birthday that I had with her was her second birthday. I was at Fort Rucker in flight school, and I was so focused on the process that I literally walked in the door and didn't even know it was her birthday. So I say that to say that her second birthday was the last one that I got to spend with her. I didn't even know it was her birthday. The third birthday I missed because it was I was deployed, and she ultimately passed, 3 months before I would have been able to spend that fourth birthday. So if I were to sum up her life, she faced constant struggles her entire life, her entire short life, but she was a fighter. She never quit. And she was a lot happier than my other kids are. She was happier than my kids, it seems, way more than my kids are. And she had a hell of a lot of stuff going on, and she was just always the happiest, sweetest baby. So, but yeah, that's kind of what happened in her short life. Now, obviously, there was a bunch of stuff that we found out, which, I'll get into that later as a conversation.
Well, one thing that I maybe I want to understand a little bit too is after this all happens now, what was the support like for you guys? Because this is, just even hearing the story, it's a traumatic thing to have happened. Your wife obviously dealt with a lot with you being deployed, flight school, and then deployment and all of that, dealing with, also raising other kids. Those kids, your other kids had to deal with and process the loss of a sibling. And you guys had to deal and process the loss of a child. What was the support like from the local community, your command, obviously your new job, and all of that? Because, I wouldn't blame you if you just put your head in the sand and said, "I'm done, I'm over." Strong people have done it. There would be no judgment there. How did you not just turn to that and just say, "You know what? I give up. I can't deal with this."
Yeah. So, as far as overall the dealing with it, when we were at Fort Rucker, there were a lot of resources in place. There were a lot of resources in place that the military had, such as EFMP, the Exceptional Family Member Program. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So EFMP is a specific program that is, it helps the family basically find specialists within a given area.
Mm-hmm.
First, they assess the needs of the family. And then through that, they start to coordinate services for the specific family member and the family themselves in order to kind of burden or lessen the burden, especially during training or just active duty service or military service in general. And so EFMP would coordinate the necessary resources for us in order to facilitate my daughter's therapy. So in other words, there's a neurologist here, there's a physical therapist here, you know, they would put all these resources into place and they would coordinate this stuff for us. And so while we were at Fort Rucker, we found out information through EFMP, like I mentioned earlier, about moving back on base as far as being able to get a therapist to come out to our house.
Mm-hmm.
They told us about Sunlar therapy and other things like that. So we had resources through EFMP, which is an invaluable program, and it seems as though the budget continues to be slashed for that program. But I'll touch on that here in the next little bit. But, you know, my wife at least had that, and Braylon had the support that she needed. And my wife was able to be home with Braylon, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like my wife had to go off to go work or something while I was in flight school or while I was deployed. But she got the additional support and resources that were needed thanks to EFMP and other services that were provided. Now, as far as command goes, at flight school, if I had to take a break from training because of my, in flight school, you're there to get through the training and get back to your unit and be mission effective and
of course
ready, trained. And so that's the whole focus. But and they didn't understand the gravity of my situation with my daughter initially. But then as they got to understand it and they heard about it, they were more than accommodating to help me be able to just kind of pause and take care of that and then come back and pick up to get through the rest. It was one of the most toughest times trying to get through the flight school, handle all that other stuff and everything else. And I don't think if it wasn't for the resources that were in place, like EFMP, the accommodations that my command while at Fort Rucker provided, I don't know that my marriage would have survived. I don't know that I would have been able to get through flight school if I had to push continuously through. I just don't know how all of it would have worked. So at Fort Rucker, everything was great. Deployment, I then fell under my actual command, and my leadership was already familiar with the situation, and they understood the gravity of it as well, and they pushed a family first climate anyway. They made sure that our families were a priority, and for me, they were definitely more than accommodating. And they understood my situation, and I can't, for everything that my command did for me, I mean, I still remain grateful to this day because I was given opportunities in the face of all of this stuff, and it was great. After I came back from deployment and when we moved to Florida, I'll tell you this, my unit was in South Carolina. To go fly or to go do drill, I had to drive from Florida up to South Carolina. When my unit found out, they immediately reached out. Our chaplain came down to my home and came and spoke to both me and my wife. The community, we were affiliated with Oak Leaf Baptist Church in Orange Park, and we had a good rapport with the pastor there and the church there. I mean, at the time, our refrigerator was empty.
Mm.
And in the face of, I mean, we needed to go grocery shopping, but that was the last thing that we were thinking about.
Of course.
But in the midst of this storm, our refrigerator was full. We had meals. We had people wanting to talk to us. Our pastor actually came to our house the day of, and he was there the entire time with us while law enforcement and everybody was there. And then there was a period of where I was grounded, wasn't able to fly for a certain period of time. And I wanted to get back up in the air, but then again, I wasn't ready to.
Mm.
And what I would come to find out, honestly, is that, you know, I was never going to be back at the level that I once was in terms of devoting all the necessary time required to maintain that sort of be that sort of caliber, if you will. Mm-hmm. I felt guilty. I felt like I put everything over my family. You know, I had to get through flight school. I had to go on this deployment. I had to go back on the deployment. And then the time was taken from me. So when you get into the different stages of grieving and everything else, guilt. But I grieved. You know, nothing yeah. takes that void away. But I'll come back to that. But the support was always great.
It's good to hear. That's good to hear yeah. that you had that. You know what I mean? It's, unfortunately, that's not always the case. You know what I mean? There's a lot of instances where command doesn't do the right thing, or, you know, people feel like they're left on an island and there isn't that community support and stuff. So if there's anything positive to take away from that portion of it, is that there were people there looking out for you guys and trying to help to the best that they can and to the best anybody can. You know, you can't make it go away. You can't change the past, but you can be there for people and try to help. And it seems like you had that.
Yeah. And the command, as far as the military itself, has several programs available. BFMP is just one of them. Military right. One Source, which if you ever mm-hmm. needed to talk to somebody, Military One Source provides free counseling services. I think you can get up to 10 per issue. So if you called again and said that you're having this other issue, that's another 10 free sessions or what have you. I mean, there's a plethora of resources that most families don't know about that are available to them. And in facing such a tragic, in facing such a storm as the one that we faced, there was just plenty of resources. And even when Braylon was alive, and we moved from Fort Rucker back to Columbia, South Carolina, before I deployed, they already reached out and had other therapists like set up for Braylon to be able to see and everything else. They did that coordination.
Right, right.
They did all of that. And then another benefit is TRICARE. You can't touch TRICARE. The life flight that happened down at Fort Rucker was 100% covered. I never paid anything out of my pocket for that. And it's just these invaluable resources that the military provides, and stuff like I cannot talk to you enough about the effectiveness and the greatness behind EFMP. But another thing that adds to the comfort, not comfort, but another thing that makes you feel more at peace in a situation such as this, is having a supportive command. And I was very fortunate in every capacity to have exactly that. And even on the civilian side, the civilian job that I work, they gave me the time off, and there was a bunch of people that donated to PTO. They donated some of their PTO so that I could take time off to you know, deal with all of this. But I couldn't just sit around. I had to stay busy. So within 4 days of the event, I was actually back at work, sitting in my cubicle trying to do stuff. But I wasn't very effective, because, I mean, there were times in my cubicle I would actually sit down and break down when thinking about stuff with replay.
Of course.
So either way, but every entity around us was very, very, very supportive.
And at that point, you still didn't really know what was the cause of all this, correct? So from Braylon's perspective, we knew, okay, seizures, there was the stroke, there was all these different things that were affecting her development and all of that. But you didn't know about the chromosomal deletion or any of that stuff until later on, correct?
Well, no. So we actually found out while we were at Fort Rucker that she had a chromosomal deletion.
Okay, so you did know that part. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we did. They did a FISH analysis, or microarray analysis, where they went in and looked at her DNA strands, and it was an actual micro deletion, not a full deletion. Mm-hmm. So you got your 23 chromosomes. She had a micro deletion in one of those pairs, and we found out through genetic testing that I actually had the same deletion, but I'm a carrier, whereas she's affected by it. Now, the one thing that I will say is, while we were at Fort Rucker and we were going through all of this stuff, she. There were different entities that wanted to learn more about her because the deletion was so rare. Now, there were some statistics that were quoted to us about this deletion in Braylon's age. However, I don't want to speak to those because I don't remember exactly what they were. Right. I can just legitimately tell you that the deletion was very, very rare, and they were just finding out about it. And so we knew that she had a chromosomal microdeletion, but we didn't understand all the ways in which she was affected by that.
Okay.
Now as time has gone on, just like technology is always advancing. Well, so is, you know, the practice of medicine. You find out more and more and more on a daily basis. And so they've kind of been able to generalize kind of the factors, some of the things that are common with this type of microdeletion, if you will, but seizures happens to be one of those things.
Hmm.
And so we did know, but as we continue to let time pass, we find more and more and more out about it, just through other people, and keeping up with other entities that are actually specifically doing stuff for the specific microdeletion.
So that's kind of where the University of Pennsylvania came in with the you actually donated some DNA, correct, for one of the studies?
Yes. So my whole entire family participated in a genetic study. We thought it'd be a good idea just to help kind of advance the treatment for this, any sort of advancements that could come with this microdeletion or deletion, as some people have an entire deletion, just help out with that. So we were able to, I was on Facebook, I was on social media, and I was, initially when I started this foundation up for my daughter, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just started telling her story. It was just like something I felt like I had to do. I knew, right, I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what. And so I just started typing her story out there.
Yeah. And so yeah, the website is very personal. It's not like a normal, and I give you almost a little bit of a kudos, because it comes off very personal. It's not just, hey, this was my daughter, this is what happened, this is what we're doing now. But you tell the story of exactly, you know, what was going on. And it does. It has that very personal, almost like, hey, this is my, almost like my therapy. I'm almost journaling this as I'm, you know, creating the website.
Right. And so in doing so, I started researching different forums on Facebook related to the deletion, and as well as Googling the stuff as well. And I came across study that they were doing, and so we volunteered for this study to help advance the treatment for folks with this specific deletion, microdeletion. And there is some studies out there. If you really get into specifics with it, it talks about the Nurexin 1 gene. Now, I can't speak to you completely intelligently enough about this. I can just tell you that there is some association with a deletion of Nurexin 1, mm-hmm, and autism.
Yes. Yep.
And there was some speculation there about Braylon potentially being autistic, but she was too young to be able to be tested for it. And then, you know, she might have been 3, almost 4, but she was actually at the development stage of somebody that might have been like 2, based off of the milestones that she was hitting. And so for that reason, we participated in that. But we also did something before I even started the foundation. We participated in another study with UMass, and it was, I don't know specifically what they were doing, but they were interested in the deletion and asked for a sample. And so we provided a sample to them as well. But University of Pennsylvania, we work, I don't want to say we work hand in hand, but we specifically, everybody in my family contributed to their study. And in addition to that, we're in process now of trying to start up another foundation that is specific to that micro deletion, to do stuff with that. So this is still in the early stages, mm-hmm, but I'm currently playing a small role in that as far as the organizational basis, as far as being able to start up that actual foundation. They've kind of talked to me as far as trying to figure out how to get that going. And it's basically, it's not through University of Pennsylvania, but it's family members that have dependents, mm, that have the deletion, that have had a relationship with UPenn. They're all kind of intertwined and getting this new foundation going. So it's still in the early stages, but we're working on that currently.
Yeah, definitely. Good. I mean, good luck. I mean, listen, if normal people don't stand up and try to help with these things, the research doesn't get forward the same as if there's some backing behind it, community involvement, like you said, people donating and being part of these studies. That's what sets them up for success, and that's how you advance. And you know, I don't know if it's a quote unquote cure, but therapies and things like that come out of all those types of studies. So it's very important that people do that. Now the foundation, as it stands right now, not just the UPenn stuff, but her foundation. You've done a 5K, correct?
We've done three, but yeah, that's our annual fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's your fundraiser. You guys have you advocate for children with special needs. You're working on furthering research. You're trying to make sure people understand some of the programs that are out there to help if they are in a situation where they have a child with special needs. What else do you guys have going on with the foundation?
So ideally, when the foundation was first started, one of the first areas that we wanted to, you have to build your legitimacy with folks when you're a new organization, right? And so one of the ways to do that is we wanted to start by something tangible, something that we could actually do. So the first thing that we did from the first year, we're going to set out to do a 5K. We actually had to make that a virtual 5K because of the fact COVID happened.
COVID, yep.
And yep. So we wound up being able to donate $1,000 to the school district. The specific program that Braylon was a part of, we donated $1,000 specifically to the special needs pre-K program for supplies and everything else. We did that the first year. The next 2 years, or correction, the second year, we were able by the second year to donate back to every entity that specifically played a part in Braylon's care, and they do great things. And so one of the things about the foundation is I don't want the foundation to be restricted, regionally, I don't want them to be restricted geographically. I want to be able to help folks across the country, anywhere there's a need, want to fill that need, that void, if you will. But by the second year, we were able to give back to every entity that played a partner care, and they continue to do good things. Those places include some our therapy that my daughter specifically went to in Ozark, Alabama. Mm-hmm. We donated to Nemours Children's Hospital, and then we also donated to Sacred Heart Children's Hospital in Pensacola, Florida. They all were very pivotal in Braylon's care, and they continue to do great things for kids. One other place we donated to Prisma Children's Hospital. We specifically bought items off of their wish list for kids that are currently in the hospital there. And the reason we donated there is because when Braylon actually had her seizure that turned into a stroke and was hospitalized, she was actually there. She was there for 9 days. So we did all that. And so when you're looking at a foundation, you're looking at your organization, you're trying to determine what's next. If you've already done this stuff and these were your initial goals, well, what is next? Well, obviously you want to continue to advocate. We continue to advocate. We've done stuff. We've told the story about how effective EFMP was for our daughter. We did that with the Fort Rucker EFMP coordinator, as well as the Fort Jackson EFMP coordinator. We've done that, and we'll continue to tell that story until we don't have to tell that story anymore. Now, I'm coming back. I'm taking on a larger project, and the goal of last year's 5K and this year's 5K, and it's an ongoing fundraising campaign. It's about $150,000, but I'm trying to build a special needs playground specific to Lexington, South Carolina, because we don't have one in Lexington.
Yeah.
There's one in Columbia. But I want one to be in Lexington, and I would like that just for the simple fact that that's where Braylon was born, and I think that the special needs community of Lexington would get good use out of such a playground. Now, beyond that, with that being said, I've got two additional fundraisers that I'm trying to work out now, because let's face it, $150,000 isn't a small amount of money.
Yeah.
And I can't just do a 5K each year to try to make that happen. So I've got to be continuous with this. So we've got some venues that I'm currently planning where we're going to have live music, speak in detail about the ongoing plans and everything else. So I'm currently working that out as we speak. Now, going forward, what's beyond this? I couldn't limit the scope of my foundation to just be, or correction, my daughter's foundation. I couldn't limit the scope to be on just that deletion. That deletion is so rare that, you know, if we limited to just that, we wouldn't be able to make that much of an impact. So I broaden the scope to include all children that have an impairing condition. And the whole goal is to improve their quality of life. And if advocating for more resources and this and that, I'm trying to draw other entities in because, as I've stated, I'm not a medical professional. I can only talk about what I've experienced and what I've learned. And I'm trying to draw in experts, if you will, to kind of help me grow beyond what we are now to get to that next level, to be more of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can sit here and I can be the middleman, if you will, and raise money for all these different organizations. But I don't want to continuously be stuck in the fundraising campaign.
Right.
I want to be doing things to be impactful with this organization. And at the end of the day, the whole purpose of it is to carry my daughter's legacy on.
So. Yeah. Well, it's that same fire that she showed. You know what I mean? That's what you want to present in her organization, you know. But I think that's what you're doing. You know, to get out there right away and be able to, within 2 years, donate to multiple organizations is pretty impressive. I mean, I've done 5Ks myself. It's not easy. You know, putting on races is difficult. It's definitely difficult to get people to show up, to donate, to do all the things that you need to do to be profitable so that you can donate to organizations. So to be able to do it in a short period of time and to be able to make an impact, it speaks to what you're trying to do to remember your daughter, without a doubt. So I think you're doing just fine.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Where can people find more information about the foundation, about the research that's going on, and, you know, if they need to reach out for help or support, where do they go?
So you can reach us at our website, www.thebraylonaubreyfoundation.org, or you can email us at braylonaubreyfoundation@gmail.com, or if you need to give us a call, 803-752-9171. Those are the best ways to get us. And we're always looking for help, looking for ideas, looking for suggestions as far as ways that we can improve our organization. And even our 5Ks, one of the things that I try to do is I try to get critiques from folks to try to make it a better event.
Mm-hmm.
I found, as mostly with anybody that's been on Earth, you know, here for longer than just, you know, a few years, you can plan and plan and plan and plan, and there's still going to be something. Murphy is going to rear his head at some point.
Always.
And so, you know, from the first physical 5K to last year's 5K, you know, I learned we received some critiques. I tried to implement some controls to take care of those. And then here we are, some other things show up that you don't even think about. So just got to be flexible and willing to just do what it takes to be successful and just be very open-minded. And that being said, I say that to say that anybody can tell us, you know, what we can do better, how we can be more impactful. We're always open to that and very receptive to any ideas. The other thing that I wanted to just say really quick is that, you know, with military service, it comes sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't have a special needs family member, military service can be tough, period. With deployments, with multiple training events, going out to the field. I mean, going out to the field repeatedly can cause, you know, a loved one to be away. But especially if you have a large family. I mean, it's just military service is tough. And it's not just the service member that serves, it's the spouse that serves as well. And it's very important for anybody that's in the military, whether it's the service member or the dependents alike. There's just a whole bunch of resources out there for them to take advantage of. And, you know, we would have really been in trouble more so than what we were if we didn't have those resources in place.
Yeah.
And so, these representatives, will typically come out and, you know, do briefings about what these different services are. And let's face it, you know, lots of people, when they're sitting in briefings, you kind of get the Charlie Brown effect. You kind of tune people out and everything else. And I would encourage people to just hone in and pay attention to what they're saying, because that information is truly, truly valuable. And you never know. Tomorrow's never promised. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what kind of events are going to be thrown up at you. And these resources can make the biggest difference in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think what you just said is very important, because as military members, we are taught readiness, always being prepared for a deployment or whatever the case may be. Having that same readiness for family events is very important as well. Having a plan, if you're a single parent, having a dependent care plan set up so that if you did get deployed or had to go to the field, that your child or loved one is taken care of, making sure that your spouse has the things that they need to succeed when you do deploy. All of those things, if we focus on that, you can't be prepared for everything, but it will make you more successful when there's bumps in the road, and when tragedy does unfortunately strike, you will be better to deal with it at the time. You know, so I think that is an important message. You know, it's very easy. You know, those briefings, some of them, we just don't even want to hear them. You know, it doesn't apply to me right now. I don't want to listen. But like you said, you never know down the road when it might apply to you, and you're going to want that information.
For sure. Well said.
Yeah. Well, Don, I appreciate you coming on the show. I really appreciate you sharing Braylon's story with us. Again, this is kind of a different interview than we've done in the past, but I really have enjoyed hearing what your family kind of took tragedy and turned it into now a mission to honor your daughter and her life and that fire and that spunk that she showed. And now you guys trying to help others with the foundation. So I applaud you for you and your family for doing that. And again, thank you so much for sharing the story on our show.
Thank you for allowing me to use your platform to be able to do just that. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, sir, you have a great rest of the day. And everybody, please check out Braylon's Foundation. Get over to the website. If you have any questions, please, there'll be a link in the description of this episode to click on, and contact information and all that. So please, if you are in need of any kind of support, don't hesitate to reach out, because there are people that are willing to help. All right. So, Don, thank you again. I want to thank Don for coming on the show. I mean, it's a tough subject anytime we deal with loss or tragedy, but it's 10 times worse, probably more than 10 times, that's an understatement, when we're talking about a child. And, you know, my heart goes out to Don and his family for what they went through, but it really highlights that people in the military, you're so hyper-focused on mission, and you know, there's so much sacrifice on the family side of things, because you generally don't get to just tell your command, well, I'm not going to do that because my daughter's sick, I'm having trouble with my wife right now. We're having some, relationship trouble. I'm not going to go on that deployment because it's better off for my marriage if I stay home. Generally speaking, not going to work out, right? So, and anybody that's been in the military, and especially if you were married or had a family while you were in the military, you understand this better than anybody. But I think it's something that it needs to be highlighted, the sacrifice that military members and veterans have had to make over the years. And when you listen to Don's story about, you know, the birthdays, and I mean, it just kills me. And I get like that even with my civilian career. And something that I'm definitely going to take away from this interview is trying to be more present for my daughter and really maximize those moments. Because we all do that, I think. Even after we get out of the military, we get so like I said, hyper-focused on the task at hand. So it becomes our new mission, our job, whatever your hobby is or whatever it is. And it's very easy to forget things, to not be present when you're playing or spending time with your family, your wife, your children, even your parents. Parents are only around for so long. You look back and you think, man, I would have loved to have sat down in the backyard and had one more beer with my dad, in front of the pond and talk about something stupid or learn about his childhood or something like that. You know what I mean? But we get so wrapped up that I think a lot of times we miss those moments. And again, like Don was talking about with the birthdays, Don doesn't realize that last birthday that he got to spend, that he forgot it was hers. You know what I mean? He didn't think that was the last birthday. He didn't know he was going to be deployed for the next one, and he certainly didn't know what was around the corner. And he said, it's something that weighs on him. So I think, it was a great interview. I love what he's doing to try to memorialize his daughter and that fire that she had and that zest for life and that drive that she had for only a short period of time. But I think the foundation really does that. But the other thing that I really got out of this was the importance of just maximizing that time with the people that you love and doing that however it is you choose to do that. I mean, everybody does that in a different way. If you're into a certain hobby, maybe that means involving your family in that hobby so that you can do both. There's nothing wrong with that. If you are very career driven, maybe that's bringing your child to work, introducing them to what you do, getting them involved. I went to work with my dad every day during my summer breaks from school, and at the time I hated it because I wanted to be out playing with my friends. I look back now, and those were some of the best times we spent together, and I learned so much about construction and working on my house and all this other stuff that I can do now, and it's because of each one of those days and the funny stories we would tell at lunchtime, and we got to curse, even though we weren't allowed to curse in the house, but we could curse on the job site with the plumber and the electrician, and I still know those guys. Then we see each other at the holidays, and those are lasting relationships that I have with those people. So I think that's what I'm really taking away, from Don and his family and his experiences, understanding that sacrifice that we make sometimes to attain whatever we need to, whether that's the mission for military members or maybe it's career or drive after the military as a veteran, putting food on the table, providing for your family and all that kind of stuff. And you get really into that and that's the number one goal. I got to go to work because I got to put food on the table. I got to take those overtime shifts. I got to work the second job. I got to do this, that, and the other thing. But I think there can be a balance, and I think there can be a middle ground of, hey, I still put food on my table. I still work the shifts I have to work. But when I'm with my family, they get me. They get 100% of me. All right. So like I said, great interview. And I can't thank Don enough for telling and sharing his story and the work that he's doing with the foundation. I think that playground is going to be amazing. I think that's something that's really needed. I have some friends that have autistic kids, and I know if they had something like that that they could go to, they would go all the time. So I wish him the best of luck with that. We're going to promote his 5K as it comes around. Make sure we can have as many people do that as possible. We'll add that to our list of 5Ks and races that we promote to help him out, because I really think it goes to a great cause. So again, Don, thank you so much. We got really not much else for this week. The Suffolk County Veteran Run Series, a lot of the races are starting to, early signups are starting to kick in. I know Dog Tag Run you can sign up for. I'm pretty sure you can sign up for Murph, and I'm pretty sure you can sign up for the Suffolk County Marathon. Really early, but I'm sure there's discounts associated with it. So get over to the Suffolk County Veteran Run Series website. click on the different races and see if their sign up is available. Because if you sign up early, usually it's at least a $10 savings. You know, some of them it's even more, like the bigger, if you're going to do the marathon, well, you've probably already made that decision. So sign up now and get that discount so you're not paying at the last minute. Because trust me, if you're doing the marathon in, you know, whatever it is, October or November, I forget when it is this year, you've already made that decision. You're going to start training now. So, you know, if you're doing the half for the Murph around the lake, if you're doing that half marathon and, you know, that's this summer, you've already made that decision. Get on it, sign up and get your discount. Okay. As always, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, YouTube. You can also go to the website at bulletproofveteran.com. You can email me at bulletproofveteran@gmail.com. Show ideas, feedback, all that kind of stuff. Please go on your favorite podcast provider and rate the show a 5-star. Leave a comment. All of that, it helps grow the audience. We get, the more likes and subscribes and 5 stars and reviews that are for these podcast providers, then when the algorithm, when they try to figure out who goes up like on the main page when you open the app, that's all based on that. So the more you do. But the biggest thing you can do, biggest is share the show, okay? Share it with a friend. If you know a veteran or a civilian that might like the show, please tell them about us. Tell them to listen to an episode that you liked, and then they get into it, and that is the best way to grow the show. If you're looking for any of our merchandise, just type that in, Bulletproof Veteran, type it into Amazon. There's also links in the bios and all that kind of stuff. And you can check out some of our shirts. We have the OG original design that we came up with. Our buddy Zero from the United States Air Force designed that original logo. And then our very close friend Marshall out in Idaho, he came up with the second iteration and the more web-friendly design, and that's up there too. That's on phone cases, that's on sweatshirts. You'll also see some fun shirts that we just came up with, some silly designs that you might like. Please, it's a great way to support the show monetarily. You know, it pays for our hosting fees and web design and all that kind of crap, all right? So I think that's it for this week. And for Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, my name is Jason, and thank you for your service.